The Guardian.
Football Daily from Euro 2008.
Yikes, Euro 2008 is just days away and it's time for The Guardian to get in on the act with Football Daily from Euro 2008. Insert sponsor's name here. We're heading for Vienna, yes, where there are some monster Euro clashes in store, mainly when Barry and I try and put through our expenses. But before that, today, a special preview show. Want to care about Euro 2008, but don't know enough about Poland's left-back crisis or Rafael's manshaft to venture an opinion? Then we've got just the show for you, as The Guardian's top Euro football brains and Barry Glendinning break down the groups to provide a Euro sample on the men who matter in Austria and Switzerland, Italy, France, Spain, Portugal, Germany, the others. It's all here in Football Daily from Euro 2008. Insert sponsor's name here. And hello, everybody. Well, as you may be aware, from this Saturday, we're going to be bringing you daily updates on Euro 2008 from the city of Falco and Wiener Schnitzel and Harry Lime, etc., Vienna. But in the meantime, we're up here on top of the world, looking down on Croatia and all the other 15 teams as well, with Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Jonathan Wilson.
Hello.
Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
And Paul Doyle.
Hello.
And later on, a bit of Sid Lowe on the line to handle that that whole Spanish enigma. Hands up, who's done their prep?
I've done a bit of prep, but seeing the prep everyone else has done, I'm getting quite concerned.
Right, I have to say, wading in with the scariest amount of homework so far is Jonathan Wilson, who has a great stat about why Euro 2008 is much better than the World Cup. Jonathan?
Well, the World Cup, there were 10 games out of 64 featuring two teams from the world's top 10 according to FIFA's rankings. Of those, one was a third and fourth place playoff, one was between Argentina and Holland after they already qualified. You're saying 8 out of 64 games mattered, 1 in 8. At the Euros,
8 out of 64 were
mattered.
Right.
Yeah. At the Euros, 5 out of 24 in the first round are between the world's top 10, even though Brazil and Argentina aren't there. So that's 1 in 5, roughly. And that presumably will improve as the tournament goes on and the weaker sides get knocked out. And you've got Romania and Croatia, who are ranked 12th and 13th in the world.
Right.
As well.
And you don't have England. So quality is just sky high.
Absolutely.
Magnificent. What are you laughing about, Rafa?
That's the only stat I had prepared. And now my thunder has been stolen. I've been preparing mainly swatting up on Vienna.
Right.
And apparently there's a lot of antique shops there, which means you'll be able to go there and buy jokes for our podcast every night.
Tumbleweed.
Now then, let's begin with Group C, eh? Because that's the group everyone's talking about, the group of death, you know. And here's why. The last two World Cup finalists, plus Marco van Basten's Dutch Masters, some big clashes in store, plus Romania, very dark horses, sort of pit pony in their darkness. Only two can survive. Who's it going to be?
I think Romania might spring a surprise in this one. The Dutch, as usual, they've already been sort of riven by infighting. Clarence Seedorf's left
already?
The camp because...
He's left already?
Apparently.
Good Lord.
It says here, Clarence Seedorf has left. I believe Clarence Seedorf has left the camp because he wasn't guaranteed a place in the first 11.
Right.
And so maybe they've got their infighting out of the way early, but I suspect they haven't.
Because I was going to make a joke about some big clashes and meanwhile outside of the Dutch locker room. I thought that's too old hat, but they've actually gone for it. Rafa, you're our Dutch go-to guy here.
Yeah, well, actually they're a strangely united squad by Dutch standards, because the people who had difficulties with Van Basten have pulled out on their own behalf.
Right.
Van Bommel said he doesn't want to play under him. Seedorf came back, then changed his mind. The only sort of lingering problems are with Van Nistelrooy, who also, of course, at one stage also didn't want to play. But you talk to the Dutch journalists, and they all say this is the nicest, most united, harmonious squad ever. So I think that won't be the problem. I think the problem will be that they have this terrible, terrible draw, that even if they cannot get out of the group, then they'll have to play most likely Italy and France again to get into the final. So, you know, it just doesn't get any worse in terms of the draw. And they only have half a team because they're brilliant going forward but absolutely useless at the back.
Well, they've got a decent goalie and the midfield's not bad. But so the problems are all defensively.
The back four are really terrible, and the two holding midfielders are both from the Dutch league, very inexperienced at that level, De Zerve and Engelaar, and they both don't really know what they're doing when it comes to actually holding midfield, because they're natural instincts to go forward. So the Dutch attack with a lot of players, but then end up defending with two because the fullbacks are also up there somewhere. And, you know, the idea is to play on the counter-attack against Italy and France, but it really doesn't make much sense inviting pressure if you can't take it. So I think they have a lot of problems, unfortunately.
And also, they struggled to break down Romania in qualifying. Romania took 4 points off them. The Dutch didn't score in either game. I think they had 68% possession in the game in Romania, but they couldn't break down the two banks of four Romania play.
And they conceded three against Austria in a recent friendly, eh? And they came back to score four in the second half. Yeah. But you're thinking it's very much what the first half. That's the significant thing. My word, so Holland perhaps not the wisest of punts. Now, France, Paul Doyle. Best squad in the tourney, do you think?
Yeah, I think you could make that argument. You could, you could start by looking who they've left out. David Trezeguet was second highest scorer in Serie A this year. Philippe Mexès, a lot of people say, is the best defender in Serie A. Flamini, although Flamini has actually just been called back because it looks like Vieira is going to be injured, which is a blessing in disguise in my book, Vieira. Although I did say this before 2006 as well, when he went on to have an excellent tournament. But I think he's past it. And putting him in midfield along with Makélélé, which is what Dominic surely would have done had he not been injured, would have been a mistake, particularly when you've got Jeremy Toulalon there. And he's had an outstanding season for Lyon and is very much a rising force.
Noguel Cliche as well, who...
To be honest, they don't need him, yeah. Abidal, I know he's had a ropey season at Barcelona, but he generally combines well with Malouda. If he doesn't, Patrice Evra will start at left back, which I think is what he should do, because Malouda, his Chelsea form is now starting to carry over into the national team, so I'm not sure he should start either, which hopefully would mean Samir Nasri would start as well.
Very nice. No, because he's the new Zidane. And this is, of course, the first post-Zidane tournament.
It is, yeah. Although Franck Ribéry stepped into that breach manfully at the start of the qualifying period when France destroyed Italy in Paris. And they played 4-2-3-1 with Ribéry in the Zidane role. They've since, as Dominic now likes to play 4-4-2, primarily because he's got so many brilliant strikers. He'll probably pair Benzema with Henri. Again, I think there's a case for dropping Henri and putting in Anelka or the new sensation, Bafi Gomis. So they've just got so many options. Will Dominic pick the right ones? That remains to be seen.
It sounds very impressive, but how come Scotland beat them, eh?
Good point. Scotland beat them because they couldn't break down Scotland's defence. In Paris, Trezeguet played. And Trezeguet doesn't move, as you know, which is one of the reasons why he's not
playing in
well, he's not in the tournament, and they performed badly. That Dominic didn't make positive substitutions in that game, in either of those games. I mean, in the one in Hamden, as far as I recall, they did have a lot of chances, but it was just one of those days. But in Paris, it was a particularly bad performance.
Barry, you're a big fan of Romania. You were saying.
I am, yes.
You've got a feel for them, as has been pointed out. They wait 8 years to get into a tournament. They get
and
stuck in a group.
Get stuck in this group. I think Romania will get out of this group. Adrian Mutu.
At whose expense?
I think, Italy will go through, because they always do. They'll grind their way through it and get through by the skin of their teeth. I think Romania will get through. I think France and the Netherlands will go out. Adrian Mutu would have been my pick for top scorer of the tournament, but... I've gone for Mario Gomez instead, because he plays for Germany. I think they'll get further and they have easier games. But I expect Mutu to shine at this tournament.
Well, he's done very well in qualifying, certainly.
Yeah.
Italy, there's a lot of talk about how they're going in with a very attacking formation with three up front, etc. And they've certainly played in a very entertaining way in qualifying. And I think one of the big questions there is how united they can stay, because that was one of their real strengths, that whole union born of the massive scandal that was engulfing the National Football League at the time during the last World Cup. But they've arrived in style, did well in qualifying. At the last World Cup, I believe I'm right in saying, they did not concede a single goal to opponents from open play. They only conceded one goal from open play, and it was actually scored by one of their own defenders.
That stat got almost as much tumbleweed as my joke about
that
antiques.
That was awed silence.
But James, yes. My question would be, who's doing any sort of attacking stuff in midfield these days?
Well, they've got lots of players potentially they could use for that kind of thing. Well, the idea is that they're going to have Pirlo, obviously, who's the kind of distributor, yeah? And you've got Gattuso and De Rossi in there. And De Rossi, let's not forget, has a mean old shot on him. and good header of the ball.
He's a box-to-box player, though.
Yeah, he's not a creative midfielder as such. Pirlo really does that stuff from deep. And then you've got Cassano, who is an extremely creative player, probably the most creative player of his generation in Italy. But how much he's going to be used, I think, to start off with, is very much going to be a second-half player, if anything. But the idea is that the work's going to be done down the flanks, where you'll have Camoranesi, who's actually Argentine, but let's gloss over that fact, on the right, who's been in exceptional form for Juve. And on the other side, you'll have either Del Piero, or here's where problems may arise, Di Natale, who's been in outstanding form in the warm-up and also for in the season. So, and then Luca Toni in the middle, or potentially Marco Borriello, who's been the revelation of the season for Genoa. Very, very complete centre-forward. So it'll be one up front with these two guys on the other side. And they call it a 4-3-3, but largely it's Luca Toni on his own up front with these guys supplying the crosses. So two to go through from the group. Barry, you've already...
I'd say Romania and Italy.
Yes, Jonathan?
I'd say Italy and France, but Romania to take something off Holland.
Ah, nice one. Raphael?
Italy, France.
And Paul?
Italy, France.
I'll go with Romania and Holland, then. Let's see. Anyway. Only
you're just doing that to be contrary.
Maybe. Yeah, okay. Very good. One of those kind of musical interludes, and then we'll return with the raw excitement of Group A. Now, next up on our freewheeling jaunt through the Euro 2008 groups is Group A. Let me see. The Czechs, the Turks, Cristiano Ronaldo and Portugal, and the Swiss, with the nation behind them. Will they go on a roll, Barry? Swiss with that. And okay, Portugal, how about them, eh? Cristiano
I think
Ronaldo.
What's interesting there, yes, is you introduced the teams. You said Czech Republic, Swiss,
Cristiano
Turkey,
Ronaldo,
and then Portugal with Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yes.
So,
but there's more to them than that.
But not much more, apparently.
Well, apparently not. Who actually knows about hands up here? Oh, Rafa, not well, you. Jonathan again.
I want to give you another stat.
All right.
I'm slightly loath to call Cristiano Ronaldo a flat track bully because he is only 23. But the great players do it on the greatest stage, and he hasn't yet done that. And he may well do that. But I think it is interesting that of his 20 international goals, only two have been against teams in the world's top 10. Whereas, for comparison's sake, Michael Owen, of his 40, quarter have been against teams in the world's top 10.
Right. Where do you keep all this stuff?
It's in my head.
My word.
He had a good World Cup last year, or whenever it was.
He had a good year in 2004 as well, to be fair. I do think, though, seriously, that one of the reasons why he's been so successful at United this season has been the selflessness of Tevez and Rooney, that they drop off, create the space. It's a very systematised approach, and it's very hard to play that. That's why United, you know, their start of the season, they didn't score very many goals at all, I think 5 in 6 games or something. And it's to get that level of organisation and understanding between players, you have to work together on a daily
basis.
Will
Portugal do that, given that they don't have a proper centre-forward or a prolific centre-forward?
They used to. They've played without proper centre-forward for the last 30 years.
Yeah, I know. So should they adapt and to give Ronaldo greater freedom to roam?
My point would be that at international level, and Yurigo Saki says this as well, and Lobanovsky always complain about this, that level of understanding, you can't develop it because you don't have the players working together often enough. Mm. So I think what does happen with Portugal and both games against Poland and qualifiers, when they lost 2-1 in Portugal, in Poland, and drew 2-2 in Portugal, was Ronaldo sort of got rather isolated on the right, and there's nobody making those runs, nobody kind of creating the space for him to go into. So I think there is a danger that he's not going to be the figure we kind of hope he will be or expect him to be, because you can isolate him on that flank.
At the same time, you know, you look at who they're playing, and obviously everyone's going to be out to mark him, and then you've got Nani on his side, and you've got Deco coming from deep.
Barry, you had something you wanted to throw in at this juncture.
I just think at some point Ronaldo is going to, his run of form is going to run out, and he'll start playing not so well. I think at a time when his head is swiveling like the woman in the Poltergeist movie, that is as good a time as any.
Exorcist.
The Exorcist.
But
if you look at the fullbacks he's up against in this group, certainly in the group, Degen, who's just gone to Liverpool, doesn't defend. He just goes forward, which is handy for Ronaldo. Turkey have problems at right back. They're very slow. No, they don't, actually. They've got... Oh, yes, they do. Because Altıntop is injured now.
All right.
Yeah. Well, yes, the guy who they would have played there, the young Fenerbahce guy, is injured. But they would have put Hamed Altıntop there, but I believe he's injured now as well.
Right. It's touch and go.
Yeah.
Okay. So, basically, Portugal, it's all about the fact they have one of the best players in the world, and he might be completely marked out of the game, or at least he certainly won't have the freedom that his Manchester United teammates buy him.
I don't think they'll have any problem in this group whatsoever.
They didn't shine in the qualifiers, Rafael. You're not.
Doesn't matter.
Not
I mean,
it.
Look.
Okay.
I don't know if Jonathan has a stat for this, but I think you look back at the Euros and the correlation between success in the qualifiers and success at the tournament. Anecdotal evidence would suggest is very, very small.
Right.
So, you know, you always have the Czechs doing fantastically well in qualifiers and doing absolutely nothing or very little, you know, in the tournaments for the last few years. The Dutch, similar story. So I don't believe that the fact that they struggle a bit. Yep.
Switzerland are no trouble qualifying and they're going to be shit.
Exactly.
So that means that somebody else has got to go out with them. Could it be the Czech Republic? Are they looking a bit old, long in the tooth type thing?
Certainly weren't impressive against Ireland in the qualifiers.
Mm.
They're not a great side, I think, the Czechs. Although, I think in that group, they still have a very good chance to finish second because the Turks are very hot and cold. You never know what side it turns up. Fatih Terim is a terrible manager, makes all the wrong decisions, picks
what?
Old...
Yeah. Hey, what?
Well, he made one good decision, which was leaving Hakan Şükür at home.
Yeah, finally. He's 45 now, finally. Or whatever.
Passport right now.
Yeah.
So, but, I think for me, Portugal and Czech Republic...
Yeah. Czechs obviously are missing Rosicki, who's going to be a huge loss.
He's not going at all? Because they're really without Pavel Nedved from the last World Cup.
Well, he's retired a couple of times.
He retired, but there was some talk that he was going to come back just for this tournament.
But he's not.
But he's not. Okay. So who have they got then?
I'm going to predict Turkey.
They've
got
Jan Koller up front.
Yeah, with Milan Baroš, who scored some goals in 2004.
Milan Baroš is the kind of player who could turn it on at this tournament and score a load of goals. He's done it before. You know, flies in the face of his club form and suddenly starts looking up and scoring goals. And who's to say he won't do it again?
Me.
So going through with Portugal, Switzerland.
No, I think the Swiss might go through with Portugal.
It's home support, isn't it? Because the Swiss are going to be fired up.
And they don't let in goals. I mean, right. To come back at your stat from the World Cup, the Swiss didn't concede any goals at all.
At all. In the and World my Cup word, they were exciting to watch, weren't they?
Switzerland and Ukraine game... is the worst game of football I've ever seen. It was two teams playing for 0-0 in penalties.
Yeah.
It was extraordinary.
Can't have been worse than West Germany, Austria, 1982.
Well, it wasn't fixed. I mean, that is true.
How much do you think home advantage will count for the Swiss?
I think that's a big thing. They're a passionate nation.
The cowbells ringing, inspiration.
I think it actually counts very little. I think you know, this idea that home hosting nations always do well. The data is a little bit skewed because until very recently, tournaments would only go to big football nations anyway. It's only in the last few years that it's opened up and you've got the likes of
the States,
Belgium. Yeah, the States.
Sweden, and Chile.
South Korea.
Japan.
Yeah, but what did Belgium do? What did Japan do? You know,
there's a separate thing there. When FIFA runs your tournament, your home nation is going to do very, very well, I would suggest. I'm not sure if you wait
for... What are you suggesting?
That's Antonio Ratti's point, isn't it?
Anyway, now, well, there you go, Sweden, Switzerland, a team built around Philippe Sendros. Problems?
Yeah, well, Patrick really Muller should be back to guide him through, because Sendros and Giroud are well dodgy at the centre of defence. But Patrick Muller has just recovered from 6 months out through injuries, played well in the friendlies. Whether he can sustain that throughout the tournament remains to be seen. But his positional sense and his distribution from the back do lend a little more cohesion to their defence.
And they've got Alexander Frey up front. He's come back after, I think, a similar period.
Yeah, he hadn't scored for a year until last week when he broke their all-time goal-scoring record by bagging a brace against Liechtenstein.
Wow. Yeah, he's also very good from free kicks, and Barnetta is very good on the wing. So, I mean, they have some decent players, and they're very compact, but I just feel that they don't have enough to get out of the group. I can't really see them.
And who's this bloke, Degen, who you mentioned just signed for Liverpool, the right
Philip
back?
Degen, yeah. Well, he's been injured virtually the whole season, so I'm not even sure he'll make it in time for the Swiss. But he's very, he's really a wide midfielder that's been converted into a right back, and you can see it as Paul said. You can see it going forward. He's very good. Very technical, very pacey, but going back, he doesn't really know what he's doing. So I'm not sure Corby Kuhn rates him that highly, actually.
So to go through then, Portugal, Paul Doyle.
Portugal, Turkey.
Rafa.
Portugal, Czech Republic.
Portugal, Swiss.
Portugal, Czech Republic.
Portugal, Turkey. Ooh. That's me, by the way. The Poles, the Germans, the Croats and the Austrians all in one group. What could possibly go wrong? Raphael Honigstein.
I don't think anything will go wrong for Germany in this group.
No. It's quite an incandescent mix of peoples, no? Isn't it?
Possibly. On the pitch, though, I think, you know, this is the group of life. This is the draw from heaven. I don't think it could have could have fixed it any better. So Jürgen Klinsmann, who was one of the people actually drawing the lots, of course, and putting Italy into that horrible group instead of Germany,
did a
very good job.
Well, yeah, you got a fantastic draw. You're pretty much a home nation as well.
We are. I mean, we play in the smaller stadiums at the tournament, which is going to be ridiculous. It'll be 30,000 stadiums, certainly in the group stage, before the Austria game in Vienna. And I wouldn't be surprised if 25,000-26,000 of these would be Germans, with another 25,000 outside. So it will virtually be a home tournament for Germany.
My word. And is it true that Joachim Löw, have I pronounced that correctly?
Löw,
has included archery and tractor pulling as part of the training?
It's not really part of the training, but they're doing a lot of stuff to...
bond.
To bond and to get the sheer tediousness of the training and to change things a little bit. Last year, in 2006, they sent players on go-kart races and also clock workers course, which Thomas Hitzesberger did very well in, apparently. So it's just part of the fun.
So the Germans, hard to see them not going through. Are Croatia going to go through with them despite the loss of Eduardo, the guy who absolutely tore up the qualifiers with 10 goals in 12 qualifying matches? Jonathan?
I think they should, but they have only scored 3 goals in the last 3 friendlies, which suggests they are missing Eduardo. They'll presumably play the Cirolic up front with Mladen Petric. And he's not as good as Eduardo, and B, he's just a different type of player. Mm. Whereas Eduardo's one of those players who can create chances from nothing. Now, I remember the game in Estonia when Croatia played there, and it was one of those awful games. Nothing was happening. Suddenly a ball drops 25 yards out. Eduardo spins, lashes it in the bottom corner, and the game's won. And I think the problem is for Croatia, they're going to have to play well in every game if they're going to go through, if they're going to progress. Whereas with Eduardo, they could have got away with playing poorly and he could have nicked them something. So I do worry about where the goals are going to come from. Having said that, yeah, they do have one of the most exciting attacking midfields there with Dario Scherner, Luka Modric and Nico Kranjčar.
Right. Well, so, you mentioned Luka Modric. How much did Spurs pay for him?
16.
Something like that, yeah. And he's worth it, is he?
Well, he's not the finished product, and we don't know if he'll be able to cope physically over a whole season in the Premier League, but it's a punt that's worth making. I think 16 million is a very fair price, yeah.
I think realistically, they only need to beat Austria and Poland to go through, and you'd always put your money on them doing that, especially on neutral ground. So I think you have to say that they should be getting out to the group quite easily.
Well, Poland are weirdly wobbling at the moment. I mean, you qualified very impressively, finished above Portugal in the group, and had two great results against Portugal. And Leo Beinhacker, he did that. The phrase he kept using was "look on the bright side of the moon," kept saying, "we are good enough. The problem has been we haven't prepared properly. We're not." Polish football wasn't tactically advanced enough, and actually we can pick players from the Polish league and they will do well enough. And Dariusz Dudka is a great example of that he was a very ordinary centre-back at Wisła Krakow, brought him in to play as a holding midfielder, and he's been excellent in that position, plays alongside Lewandowski, and they're now very solid in that area. But since they qualified, Beinhacker's panicking. He's brought in Roger, this Brazilian who only arrived in Poland in 2005. And the strange thing is that the area where you just said Poland were actually quite well endowed was in that attacking midfield area where they've got Błaszczykowski, Smolarek and Krzyżanowski. And you think that's actually quite, they're all quite good. They're all useful in those roles. They work very well together. And he's brought in Roger, who's a left winger, but he can play in the centre. So one of those three is going to miss out. And unless he drops Juravski and plays Smolarek as a centre forward. But I suspect one of those three will miss out. And there's people in Poland saying, why are we needing to bring in a Brazilian, and what's he got to do with Poland? It's not even like Elisa Debe, who had a Polish wife.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And Austria?
The less said, the better.
Well, everyone seems to agree that they're the worst team ever to set foot on a football pitch.
But can they really be that bad? I mean, I know they're below Ethiopia and Oman in the world standings.
I don't think that really makes much of the world standings. I wouldn't root too much.
Malta, Ghana, Paraguay, Japan, Tunisia and Chile have all beaten or drawn with Austria in the last 18 months. That's Malta, Ghana, Paraguay, Japan, Tunisia and Chile. They've only won
They beat Malta 5-0, though.
This is a country whose their own supporters launched a petition to have them withdrawn from the tournament, so which doesn't really... Smack it. They might surprise somebody, but it seems to be very, very unlikely.
I mean, I, I can honestly see them beating the Poles.
Yep.
They do very well, and I think Slaven Bilic talks about this, is that they usually start very well. They come out of the tracks, they really have a go. They were 3-0 up against the Dutch, I think, within half an hour or so. They nearly murdered Germany, but then went on to lose 3-0. And I think, you know, if they can sort of surprise somebody like that, I think the Poles could be vulnerable. But then, you know, there's absolutely no chance they can get any result against the Croatians.
And
or the
one
Germans.
Win would be enough to make it a successful tournament for the Austrians.
Probably.
Right. Okay. Well, nothing else to see here, I think. Let's move on from Group B with, by consensus, Germany and Croatia going through. Now, joining us on the line from Spain to help us discuss Group D is Sid Lowe. Sid.
Hello.
Hi, Sid. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Excellent news. You're probably on holiday. Are you off to the seaside soon?
No, I'm still in Madrid, still working.
What are you doing, Sid? What are you doing?
I'm doing all sorts of things. Previews for the European Championships, obviously, for Guardian Unlimited and various other bits and bobs at the moment as well.
Crikey.
Sid, I have your preview of Spain for Euro 2008 that was published in World Soccer, and we'll be scouring the one you submit to us for similarities.
Yeah, you'll be trying very hard to make sure that I don't repeat myself at all, which is quite difficult. Because, of course, it's not just not repeating myself from world soccer. It's not repeating James's questions, of course, as well. And it's not repeating what we say every single tournament. And that's kind of the key with Spain, is that every year we go into it with the same mentality. Wow, this time they could really do it. And this time they kind of don't really do it.
But this time they really could do it.
Who's repeating the question?
Now they've got Torres up front, who's just had a monstrous season. A Villa who's surely going to return to form. Fabregas, who's outstanding. Other people from Spain as well who are
Iniesta.
Really good. There you go. There's another one.
And well, yeah,
a mad manager.
That's what I'm writing at the moment. There are the reasons to be cheerful, and lots of them. But there's also big question marks, and it's the normal thing about Spain that one of the things that kind of makes it so, if you like, kind of so difficult for fans to back them and to say, yeah, they're going to do it this time. It's precisely the fact that they've been in this position before. I mean, you know, with a lot of countries, perhaps it doesn't matter what's happened before, but with Spain, that history really does, weigh on them. And there really is a kind of a sense of, well, look, we can't let ourselves believe that we're going to be great, because all we'll do is jinx them and we'll make it not going to be great. There are also more kind of purely footballing reasons why you look at the side and think, okay, perhaps not as good as we think they are.
Well, which are they?
Well, there's a whole load of them. The first one is that the defence is really pretty awful. Luckily for them, they've got arguably the world's best goalkeeper behind them. But the defence really doesn't look great for Spain. There's also the fact that the two players that obviously people in England are really going to go on about and say, oh, these are players that should win the European Championships, are possibly the two players who at the moment have the most doubts hanging over them in the Spanish national team, of course, Fernando Torres and Cesc Fabregas. Not least because Luis Aragonés has tinkered with the side a little bit to try and make sure that he's got a position for Fabregas. It still isn't really working. It feels a little bit like he's looked at his squad and gone, wow, we've got 425 brilliant central midfielders. Let's find a way of playing all of them. And a few of them are kind of forced into positions that are not their own. And then the Torres thing is that Spain play a very, very patient, very, very slick, very kind of to the feet possession game. And of course, at Liverpool, Torres plays completely the reverse. And he's still not entirely happy, I think, Torres, in the way Spain are playing at the moment. It's not suiting his game at all.
Oh dear. But they're going to get through out of the group, yes?
Oh, the group is a piece of cake, isn't it? I mean, the group is really very, very easy. And if they don't get out of the group, then they'll really be pilloried. But everybody's not looking at the group. Everybody's looking at it and going, well, that's fine. The question mark is what happens next. Mm. And this is where Spain think that the draw hasn't been particularly kind, because next up, they're very, very likely to get Italy. And if there's a team in the world that the Spanish hate and are fearful of in equal measures, it's the Italians.
They just beat them 1-0 in a friendly, didn't they?
They did beat them 1-0 in a friendly. They were really pleased about that as well, because they beat them 1-0 playing rubbish, which was the one thing that the Spanish have always believed they can't do. There's a kind of a contradiction in the Spanish mentality towards football, which is that we play great football, but things tend to go against us. So when they suddenly beat Italy not playing great football, they're like, wow, that's good, isn't it? That's a sign that we can, you know, the as the old cliche goes, the sign of a championship winning team is a team that can play badly and still win.
That's why our podcast is so successful, I always think.
That is obviously what it is.
See,
they have picked up some results, which makes them a little bit more optimistic. But the big thing about saying is that psychological thing that no one really wants to believe because they don't want to jinx it right now.
See, is the manner in which you suggested that Spain getting out of their group is a foregone conclusion not indicative of everything that's wrong with them in that? I don't think it's a foregone conclusion at all.
No, well, to some extent, I think you're right. And this is one of the things that Luis Aragonés has insisted on time and time again. And I've pointed this out before as well, that Spain believe they play the best football in the world. And there's sometimes a desire to find a scapegoat when it doesn't go right for them. So in other words, it's not that we play badly, it's that that ref robbed us or that unlucky decision went against us. We missed that open goal. And of course, when Julio Salinas was playing, that was true most of the time. And they kind of have this sense that perhaps, you know, they kind of lack the competitive spirit. And I do think that there is, certainly Luis Aragonés is insisting to his players, look, it's all well and good playing nice football, but you've got to go out there and win. Nothing else really matters. And I do think that he is trying to get the players to focus on the group. But the whole of the country has decided that they will get through the group. And personally, I think they're right.
Sid, just while you're on the line, you're in Madrid. What's the latest on the Ronaldo story out there?
Well, the latest on the Ronaldo story really is that they are kind of backtracking a little bit around Madrid. They're trying not to infuriate Manchester United anymore after the extremely comic rants of Alex Ferguson and Carlos Queiroz, who's really gone to town on them. And they're trying to now say, no, look, it's impossible. It would only happen if Real Madrid and Manchester United could talk, and therefore could only happen if Manchester United would be prepared to sell. So they're trying to take a step back, but of course the Spanish press is not really letting them. Calderon did a huge interview in Marca, which is in today's Marca. I assume he did the interview a few days ago, in which he said, I'm not going to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo, and then proceeds to talk about him for a double-page spread, in which he keeps saying things like, no, let's not talk about him. I tell you, it would be nice if he came, wouldn't it? And they're trying not to push it at the moment, but of course this story, as has been the case now for 10 or 12 days, is all in Cristiano Ronaldo's hands. Everybody's waiting for him to say something about his future, and it really is in his hands. And while Man United get upset and angry with Real Madrid, which, of course, to some extent they're entitled to, they should perhaps have a little word with him, because he's the one that's allowing this story to keep on rumbling.
Mm. All right. Well, there you go. Now, Spain, they may or may not make it out of the group, depending on who you listen to. Who do we think is also a contender from that group?
Well, when you look at it, the Spanish are saying to themselves that, and this is one of the things that comes back to your point before about it isn't the problem that they think they'll get out. They're also saying, hang on a minute, or at least those who are being cautious are saying, hang on a minute, let's not get cocky, because, of course, Greece in there, who won it last time, and nobody expected them to. There's a feeling that the Russians, in Spain at least, is a feeling that the Russians are a very good side, but perhaps not quite yet a great side, that they're perhaps a little young and haven't quite come through. But the feeling really in Spain is it's Spain and one other, and they don't really care who the other is.
But Jonathan, what about Russia? Are they
very difficult to call? I mean, they're very, very inconsistent. I mean, they lost 3-0 to Romania. I mean, an experimental side, to be fair, back in March. But then since then they've beaten Kazakhstan 6-0, they beat Serbia 2-1, and played quite well apparently at the weekend. What they have done, which I think is important, is they have finally broken up the three at the back of Ignashevic and the two Berezitskis, who, as Emil Heskey proved at Wembley, are hopeless. Just can't deal anything in the air, despite being 6'6" and 16 stone or whatever. So they brought in Shirokov from Zenit, who's been excellent since he went there. Certainly excellent since Christmas, and was key to their UEFA Cup success, or one of the keys to it. And I think that's one of the positive things that Russian players and Russian pundits always talk about, the inferiority complex. And the seven tournaments since independence, they've gone out in the first round three times and they haven't qualified four times. And even in Soviet times, whenever they left the Soviet Union, whenever they left Russia, there was a sense of inferiority. They never quite fulfilled their potential. But this is now a golden age for Russia, as far as Russians see it. Putin striding on the world stage. They've won Eurovision. They've won the World Ice Hockey Championship. Zenit of UEFA champions. Two UEFA champions in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
So, and Hiddink, your players have talked a lot about how Hiddink has relaxed them, how they now believe in themselves far more. My concern is that they'd still play three at the back. They're the only major nation in the world who still do play three at the back. And yeah, there is a reason why that's going out of fashion.
They're also going to be missing Arshavin, is that right?
First two games he's suspended, yeah, because of stupidly getting sent off for 6 minutes to go against Andorra. He'd taken a terrible battering all game, and that's why Andorra shouldn't be allowed.
But
shouldn't be allowed,
isn't it?
Full stop,
three group games, and he's going to miss the first two of them. And he's one of their key men, no?
Yeah, but... Well, yes, he is, and that's indisputable, but he was one of Zenit's key men, and they beat Bayern 4-0 without him, because Zivianov stepped up to the plate, and Zivianov's in this team. They can play Seashev and Pavlyuchenko up front. They've got Pogrebniak, so they do have options. I mean, he is their best player, no question, but he's not their only player.
Right. Well, very impressive.
Is Pogrebniak going to be fit?
Well, possibly not, but Pavlyuchenko and he, yeah, they wouldn't play them together anyway. They're quite similar, so I don't think he's as big a loss as certain other players might be. I mean, if they lost Anyukov, say, the right wing-back, who is incredibly fast.
I mean, I actually quite like them to get out of the group, but the problem is, of course, if they're missing him, Arshavin, and if Pogrebniak might not make it, then that key game, which will decide it, Greece v Russia, the second game for that second spot, will be very close. I mean, I think the Swedes have no chance whatsoever, but I think Russia have a chance of going out of it.
Yeah, all right, so if Sweden don't have a chance, what about, and they are the last team that we turn to, they are the holders, Greece. Any chance, do you think, of it all happening all over again for Greece?
Well, it's pretty much the same team. The only player they've lost since then is the captain, Zagorakis, who's gone. So, by that logic, it could happen again.
Is that
again,
a good thing or a bad thing, having the same team from 4 years ago?
Well, I don't know. That remains to be seen. They have the only new blood that's coming through is they've got that striker, Gekas, from Leverkusen, who's apparently fairly nippy.
And should we just get a quick round of predictions for Group D? Barry?
Russia and Spain.
Yeah, Spain and Russia.
Spain and Greece.
Spain and Greece, yeah. I think the Russians could deal with nurturing that inferiority complex again. Losing to Israel. And did they only beat Andorra 1-0 in that must-win game? Yeah, that doesn't augur particularly well.
All right. And Sid, you?
I think I'll go for Spain and Greece as well.
Well, there you go. Fantastic. Thank you very much, Sid. Before we all doff our headphones and stuff, we've got some predictions plus a clog story, which is fantastic, well worth waiting for. We're talking about Greece. I'm just thinking, Greece in 04, Denmark in 92. You do get these European Championships, even though it's a very tough tournament, etc., as you were saying back at the start. You do get these bizarre results, don't you, in the European Championships? But who could it be this time?
One of the reasons smaller teams win is big teams knock each other out. Whereas the big teams in World Cups can just warm up easily against poorer sides. It's like the Champions League now has become this kind of cartel of 12 teams.
Right. Well, indeed. Now, having heard all that, Barry, because you were taking loads of notes, actually, and you really were. It was quite sweet. Who do you think's going to win it?
I think Germany are going to beat Russia in the final.
Wow. How specific the score?
3-1. Mario Gomez to score two of them.
Phew. Get in. Jonathan?
Germany to beat Italy in the final.
Wow.
Germany to beat France. 1-0.
France to beat Portugal.
Incredible. I've no idea. Literally no idea. But that all sounds very, very plausible. But before we go, time for that top clog-based story from Jonathan Wilson. We're heading to Vienna, Jonathan. On Ground Zero is not always the most comfortable place, is it, on the front line of journalism? As Sean Ingle discovered, listeners who go all the way back to the World Cup show will remember Sean Ingle being bitten on the bottom by a dog.
And I was there.
You were there, Jonathan.
Were you that dog?
No, the dog bit you to it.
We journalists often say it was a privilege to be there, but really on that occasion it was a privilege to be there. It was a very nice traditional restaurant in Baden-Baden. There was a few Guardian people there.
Kevin McCarran was on
there.
The menu.
Marina Hyde was there. Right. Dan Chung, the photographer, was there. And Sean was wearing these ludicrous clogs. This is probably the bit he didn't tell you. And it was a very quiet, peaceful restaurant. And Sean has to leave early because he has to email his solicitor, I think, or his estate agent, one of the two. It was definitely about a flat. And as he leaves, wooden-floored restaurant clogs, clippity-clop, clippity-clop, this poor Alsatian that's been sleeping very calmly under a table is shocked awake and does what dogs do and leaps out and plunges its fangs into his left buttock.
How bad was the damage, Jonathan?
Well, I was privileged to have the opportunity to inspect it at very close quarters because Sean, being Sean, dropped his trousers in the restaurant, exposed said buttock. Kevin took a very keen interest. In
Kevin McCarra was there.
Yeah, he was very concerned. Dan Chung took photographs, he being a photographer. There is a great photograph I've seen of Marina and Kevin inspecting Sean's left buttock. Kevin then, I mean, I was just helpless with laughter, obviously. But Kevin then, fair play to him, he kind of turned into, from mild mannered Glaswegian to angry Glaswegian. Starts all the finger pointing. This is a very serious matter at the dog owner. And then, this being Germany, the police and the paramedics turned up very rapidly. And we all had to give statements. And Sean limped off to hospital.
My word, in clogs. What on earth was he doing wearing wooden footwear?
Europe, Holland, Germany.
Oh, everybody who wears clogs has it coming.
Was the dog okay in the end? Did it get the necessary jabs after this incident?
Unfortunately,
it might have caught vegetarianism, teetotalism off Sean or something. He developed a big creatine habit.
All right, where
well,
is
can't
Sean
have been
today,
very though? Juicy, could
Sean it? Sean is enjoying a day off, which means he's sitting at home sending work-related emails to everybody.
Ah, dear. Well,
so the purchase did go through. He did eventually get to talk to his solicitor, so that's the main thing.
Hello to you, Sean, if you're listening. And goodbye to you, listeners, because I think that brings us to the end of a rip-roaring and fact-filled, preview of Euro 2008. As I say, from Saturday evening, we will be available daily for your oral pleasure from the, what's it called?
Beer Clinic.
Yeah, it's the Goethe.
Nothing recorded in a place called the Beer Goethe, Clinic that I'm involved in is right. Going to end well.
Right. Carpet burns ahoy. Yeah. Okay. So, well, there you go. Barry and I will be there and a cast of, lots of others as well. Barry, many thanks for joining us today. In the meantime, Jonathan Wilson, outstanding.
Thank you very much.
Raphael Honigstein. Come on, then.
Hello.
It's that oxygen problem.
Sorry, goodbye.
Yes, goodbye. And Paul Doyle.
See you, James.
And we'll see you too, Paul. Thank you very much, listeners, for being with us. And we'll speak to you on Saturday. Bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.